So what we're thinking of tonight is, what a wonderful world. Why does beauty move us? How do we explain the way that we respond to the world around us? How do we explain the way that our minds and our senses work? And how do we explain the way that the world is full of beauty? And rich beauty, you know, I mean, not half-hearted beauty, really extraordinary beauty. Are you familiar with the names Crick and Watson? Francis Crick was the British scientist who, along with Watson, the American, discovered the molecular composition of DNA. So they didn't invent DNA, God invented it, but they discovered the formula of DNA back in the 1950s, and together with two others, they won the Nobel Prize. This is what Francis Crick had to say about explaining human consciousness. He said, "You, your joys and your sorrows, your memories and ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. Your joy, your, oh, I love you feeling, your drawn to, you know, sense of wonder in front of a great work of art is nothing more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and all the molecules that move around them." He says, we can reduce ourselves to the fact that we have a brain and a body, and that's all we are, folks. We're just physical, and we have these neurons that give us a mind. Richard Dawkins has used the argument that our genes are selfish. And to be able to survive, we need to replicate, we need to reproduce. So we need to find a mate. That's why we are attracted to beauty. And beauty and attraction are just a very useful part of that process. We are nothing more than our genes, and our genes are selfish. But does that give an adequate explanation of the world, of why the world is inherently beautiful, and does it explain our inner sense of beauty and the way that we are drawn to beautiful things? So I want to look at those two questions, really. Does that sort of naturalist approach give us an adequate explanation of why the world is inherently beautiful, and does it explain this beauty, on sense of beauty on the inside, and that what it is that draws me to beauty? The world is a beautiful place. The world is not flat. Some of us have lived in Suffolk and might have fallen into the trap of thinking that, but the world is not flat. And when I once said in Suffolk, this is a flat county, I got heckled. And they said, no, it's not. I said, well, I've lived in Scotland, you know, so, yeah.
Someone went out and proved it. Centuries ago.
Well, the world is not flat. It's slightly oval.
Still people think it is today.
Yeah, yeah. It has hills, it has mountains, it has valleys, it has forests. It is filled with the rich flora and fauna of living things. And there's an incredible variety and beauty within the natural world. Now, I want to go in a few directions just to explore that. I think there is in the beauty that's in the world a sort of redundant beauty, a beauty that doesn't have a physical purpose. It's just beautiful, yeah? And it doesn't have to have a reason to be beautiful, yeah? The plant world is charged with beauty, and we see that at this time of year. Now, I meant to bring one of our orchids. We have five different orchids at home, and they're all in flower at the moment because it's the season, and they are stunning. So the one that greets me in the shower room is the best. It's sort of up here, and the flowers on it are purple, pinky purple, and incredibly cleverly designed. Now, people will say, ah, yes, but that's so that they draw pollinators to themselves, and the pollinator gets down inside and sometimes gets trapped and gets the nectar and so on. Yes, that's true, but it doesn't have to be as incredibly detailed as it actually is. There are all sorts of varieties of wild orchids in Britain, and some of them have extraordinary characteristics. The one that looks like a woman throwing her arms and legs wide is sort of a curious kind of orchid that welcomes the insect into it. The ones that we've got are speckled. There's no logical reason why they need to be speckled to attract an insect. Why are some of them pale and some of them purple? And no, some of that is because, you know, they've been cultivated and people have been growing them to do wonderful things. But they, whether they're wild or whether they're cultivated, they have sensational colouring and patterns and types, and they are hugely over-engineered for what they need to be. And most of what it has is more than it needs to get pollinated and to multiply and reproduce. And actually, you can reproduce an orchid without using a seed. You know, you can divide a big plant. In the wild, they will grow big and just gradually spread. You can take a leaf of an orchid and propagate it from a leaf and so on. They are incredibly fertile plants and multiplying plants. So there is a built-in redundancy there. They are more beautiful than they need to be just to survive. We live in a country of amazing rock formations. You know, we've just been down in Dorset, and you go to Durdle Dor, or you go to any part of the Jurassic coast. You go down to Cornwall and walk the lovely Cornish coastal path. Is that what you did last week? Yes. A few weeks ago. Yeah. You walk the Cornish coastal path, or you climb Snowdon simply because of the rugged beauty of the rock forms. And if you think this country is beautiful, go to the Alps. You know, I've been watching Michael Portillo's Journey Around the Alps on the BBC iPlayer, and it's staggering to see the places that that he goes to. And there is no evolutionary purpose served by that beauty. It is the natural world in all its grandeur, and it is not flat and bland. It is you know, lifted up into mountain ranges in the most extraordinary beauty. I am stunned by the beauty of the bird life in this country, in all its colour and its variety and its beauty. Not all of that beauty is necessary for those birds to survive and to reproduce. I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was a week ago we had... Jess's mum came to church, John and Jess, and she's from Cornwall. And the red kite has not made it to Cornwall. So she said, look at that. Wow, it's a red kite. She clearly doesn't live in Didcot, where, you know, there's about 40 or 50 in the air at any one time. You know, there are more kites over Didcot than there are planes, you know, stacking up over Heathrow, kind of thing. And yet, because we're so used to it, we take it for granted, don't we? The red kite is an extraordinary wingspan, and its ability to maneuver with its tail and the colouring on the wings. You know, it is an astonishing thing to look at, and to look at the variety of the bird world. We see so many of them that we're a bit immune to the beauty of a red kite. Have you ever seen a murmuration of starlings somewhere near the coast, and they're swooping round in a cloud, and huge numbers of them? I find that utterly extraordinary that they're able to do that. And they all know how to turn just like that. Now, I don't think that can be a mating dance. I think it's just an ability that they have, and it's something beautiful that they do. How extraordinary. Why does the world need peacocks and flamingos and ostriches, unless it is to make us laugh and to make us astounded at how stupid and ridiculous that they look? And I could go on at length about the joys of fishing, having watched Bob and Paul on their Gone Fishing program, and all the different fish that they've managed to hook out of our rivers. We could talk about the big five animals of Africa, the extraordinary variety of horses across the world, and so much more. Why does beauty exist? Either it is random, and it just so happens that it's beautiful, or it is done for a purpose. And this is the Bible's explanation, Ecclesiastes 3. God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. God has made everything beautiful in its time. The Christian worldview is that we are God's creatures, we are set in his beautiful creation, and it is oversupplied with beauty to point us to a greater beauty. We are equipped with this inner sense of beauty that no other creature has. Do come and grab a seat. We are equipped with this inner beauty, this inner sense of beauty that no other creature has. As far as we know, no cat, no horse, no dog, despite being sophisticated in certain ways, has the admiration of beauty that we have. I got into trouble with a lady once, something I've written and published. She rang me up and told me that her cat had seven different sounds that it could do, and that it was highly intelligent. And I said, what does it say to you then? You know, she tried very, very hard to convince me that her cat was as intelligent as us, and she didn't succeed. You see, as human beings, being made in God's image, we are the only creature that is creative because we respond to the creative nature of God. We reflect the creative nature of God. He has placed us in his creation as the only creature that can create beauty. We are artistic, expressive people, able to use language for great effect. So, for example, here's some words of A. E. Housman from A Shropshire Lad. Loveliest of trees, the cherry now, is hung with bloom along the bough and stands above the woodland ride, wearing white for Eastertide. And since to look at things in bloom, 50 springs, our little room, about the woodlands I will go to see the cherry hung with snow. That's staggering beauty, isn't it, really? And soldiers used to take that book of poems off with them to fight their wars in various parts of the world, and especially during the First World War, to remind themselves of the beauty back home that they were fighting for. We are creative people. We can do that with the English language, and other poets can do amazing things with their languages to convey beauty. We are the only creature that really can sing a melody. When I'm working, generally, of a morning, I'm listening to the Radio 3 breakfast show on the BBC Sounds, and it always starts with birdsong, which is interesting. And then the birdsong melds into music, and you see the difference. Yes, birdsong is amazing and wonderful to listen to, especially early in the morning, but it isn't anything like the melody of music that we have created. Now, of course, in the Instagram age, we've reduced beauty to being skin deep, haven't we? You know, beauty is what we can see, what we can photo, what we can put on our Instagram account, and that kind of skin deep beauty is all about trying to attract a mate, isn't it? It's very, very shallow, but beauty can be the deep inner beauty of kindness, finding emotional depth in a friend in a crisis, that you can talk to them and they will understand you and they will listen to you. Admiring somebody's moral character, that they do not give in to pressure when they are under great stress. Or it can be the beauty of the mind, can't it? Listening to your teacher, whoever that teacher or, you know, thinker might be, and being amazed with the beauty of their mind. It can be something like travelling to the other side of the world, meeting somebody who you don't share a language with, but somehow they manage to do things to care for you in a kind way and greet you with a smile, and you manage to make that sort of connection. And the language of kindness can be a really beautiful thing, can't it? God has made everything beautiful in its time. But I don't know if I can convince you of this, but I want to do a little art lesson. When we rule God out of the picture, what happens? Here are some pictures. If you can share those. Yeah. Share those in pairs. There you go. And there's more on the back. So the top picture you're looking at is a picture that Helen and I saw when we were in Budapest. It's one of the ladies spinning is called the Storyteller. Okay, we were in the National Gallery of Hungary, as soon as I saw that picture, I was drawn to it, and I couldn't stop looking at it. And I went round the hall, and I had to come back and stare at it again. So powerful. That was by the Hungarian Philip Laszlo, and you look at it, and you look at the expression on the woman's face. You look at the rapt attention of the children. The children are all different. Look at the wonder in their faces. Look at the way that they are hanging on every word. And what's she doing? She's spinning, but she's also spinning another yarn while she's talking to them. And there are lots of objects around the picture which are probably telling a story as well. She's not rich and famous. She's everyday, and yet she's beautifully dressed. Got an amazing blue dress on, hasn't she? And the children have got all sorts of details. You know, one of them has gone through, the boy has gone through the elbow of his shirt. The more you look at it, the more detail you see. You know, he has captured a beautiful situation. And one of the things we noticed going around this gallery was that they had put together a series of Hungarian artists who captured everyday life and found beauty in the ordinary things. They didn't paint paintings of, you know, great cathedrals or great architecture or a huge landscape. They just got ordinary people and made them beautiful. I love that painting. I'd love to get a big print of it and put it on my wall. Laszlo was a Christian. He came to London to work as well. He painted lots of famous portraits and so on. His art was deeply influenced by his faith. Now, if you look down at the portraits below him, the portrait on the right is not, what was the actor's name? He's not Gene Hackman. He bears a striking resemblance to Gene Hackman. But do you think? I thought there was quite a likeness to Gene Hackman there, but see what you think. He is actually Pope Innocent X. Vera's into her film stars, aren't you? Can you see the likeness? Maybe. No, maybe not. Okay. Pope Innocent X, his portrait was painted by Velázquez, however you say his name, way back in the sort of Reformation times. Some people say it's the greatest portrait ever painted, looking at it. And then Francis Bacon, who was a British sort of rebel artist of the 1950s, decided to paint his equivalent of it, which is the man screaming on the left. He has done his interpretation of it. And it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. It's like all the life is draining out of him. What was he trying to say? Where is all the beauty gone? What was he telling us about his dad or about the state or the church or whatever? He's clearly horrified by something. And when you turn over, what do you think the brown picture top right is about? Yeah, the brown one with a sort of triangular form. It's a Picasso, needless to say. I like the way you're turning it round, Jackie. And it looks like the sail of a boat. Yeah, okay. It's actually the human face. apparently, if you've got glaucoma and you know, you hold it across the other side of the room, you might possibly see something. I don't know. Then you've got a Jackson Pollock next to it, the red picture. Jackson Pollock just put a canvas on the floor of his studio, and he got buckets of paint and he poured them all over the canvas. I think he even poured paint onto his canvas to paint his name on the corner. I mean, what is that saying? You know, it's gone soulless, isn't it?
He's been over it with his bicycle.
He's been riding over it with his bike. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Then you've got Kandinsky at the bottom. I don't know nobody could tell me what Kandinsky's painting was all about. I'm sure there was a tea tray or a tea towel in the 1970s that had that on it, but it looks like the sort of thing you would wallpaper a 1970s room with. You're thinking drugs, hallucinations, and not being able to control your brushes when you come out of it to paint it.
Yeah.
Now, my point is, if we take God out of the picture, we end up in an ugly dystopia where all the beauty has gone missing. The beauty we were meant to rejoice in, the beauty we were meant to create as a response to beauty. Now, the preacher of Ecclesiastes says, God has also set eternity in the human heart. It's a very powerful thing to say that. God has set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And I think that gives us a clue about beauty. Beauty points us to a world beyond this world. You see, I think beauty is like the fingerprints of God. One way that God can make us convinced of his existence is through making the world we live in truly beautiful. Psalm 19 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands." So that in every culture there is beauty, there is wonder, there's a revelation that speaks into every people group despite the barriers of language. And not only does God speak in what he has made, but he finds a response in us to make us creative, to make us seek him, to make us worship him, that leads us to connect with him.